Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sarney, and with me is legendary boxing scribe, the pundit, and the pun master. It is, of course, Steve Lillis.
Good day to you, Dev. Good day to you. And another sweet intro from you. I'm getting a bit embarrassed by them, to tell you the truth. I'm getting a bit red-faced sitting next year here because they get better and stronger every week. So you can tone them down a bit if you want to, but I'm not encouraging you to.
I would never. And because you said red-faced, you just literally reminded me of a joke that I made up myself the other day. I tried it on my wife. She wasn't too impressed. Tried it on a friend. Loved it. So let me see what you think. Steve, are you ready for my joke?
I'm ready.
What do you call a red-faced lawyer?
Good one. I've no idea. What? Tell me, Dev, what do you call a red-faced lawyer?
An embarrasser. Get it? Because embarrassed.
Embarrassed.
Right.
Anyway, what you got on the podcast?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I was
me?
Just... What you got on the... I was quite happy with that, right?
There's been better ones from you.
Steve, talk to me about last week's BT Sports show, Daniel Dubois' firefight with Richard Lahti. What did you make of it all?
He would have learnt a lot in that fight, for sure. But did he need to do all that bravado, machismo? Maybe it was to show a message to the big rivals he's got in the Frank Warren stable now, Joe Joyce, and of course, who's become an old rival now, Nathan Gorman. It was tremendously exciting. He didn't need to do that stuff. He come through a chin check and got the visitor out the way in the end and won in style. But it was an exciting fight. People watching on BT and at Wembley Arena loved it. So it's added to his popularity for sure. But what was quite amusing, when he was standing there and just exchanging blows with scant regard for defence, was Frank Warren's face in the front row there. It wasn't a happy one, was it?
He was terrified. I was terrified as well. You sort of watch it behind, you know, with your hands in front of your eyes kind of thing, just kind of peeking through and saying, please, please don't land Big Richard Lahti, because Lahti meant business. Once he made it over to the country, you know, long story, but once he made it over to the country, he was talking about coming for Dubois' head and how Frank was trying to block his visa and all. He was crazy in fight week.
He come over and he gave it and got and pulled Dubois into that fight. Now, Dubois, well, when I say he'll learn from that fight, he'll learn there are situations in boxing where you need to go to war. There's situations when you don't. And he'll learn from that when's the right and when's the wrong time to stand and have a trade up in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually asked him afterwards. I got to see Dubois afterwards. I said, did he hurt you? And his sister was close by as well. And he just sort of, he started laughing at me, almost like sort of mugging me off. Like, oh, did he hurt me? And like looking at his sister for like, oh, he's asking, did he hurt me sort of thing. But I can confirm that he didn't get hurt by any of those massive Lahti blows. That's what he's saying. And I was foolish to ask, it would appear.
You were foolish to ask. I saw the picture of you and him. So he was quite sweet with you anyway, sounds. But you know, it's funny you mentioned his sister there. And the only time I ever really see him laugh and look a bit relaxed is when he's in her company. He really is. He warms to people more, I think, around her. And when she, you know, she's around or she's mentioned, you know, they're close, those two.
That's true. Yeah, they are. And she's a talent herself. Talk to me about the other boys on the show then. Anyone stand out for you? For me, I thought Sonny Edwards, his stoppage was quite brilliant, his whole performance.
Yeah, he gets better and better. You know, he lives the life up at that gym in Sheffield. You know, he's moved away from everything to be in Sheffield and he lives in that gym. He's just getting better and better. I am looking forward to when, you know, he comes down to flyweight, because that's the weight for him. Mm-hmm. If you do look at the champions at light flyweight, they're pretty much, we say, an elite bunch. When you look at the new Francisco Estrada, I think, is a new WBC champion.
So that's a superfly, isn't it?
Superfly, where he's fighting at the moment. Yuen and Kayasu, we've got on Box Nation this weekend, is the brilliant IBF champion. Yeah. You know, you've got Khaled Liafaye, the WBA champion from Burma, who we'd think is possibly he could beat. And we've got a really good WBO super flyweight fight coming up in June between Aston Felicity, I think, and Kazuto Ioko, who's already a three-weight world champion at minimum light fly and fly. So, you know, that's a good bunch there. And down at fly, they're the fly boys are pretty good. But I think we'll see him even better at flyweight, and I'm excited for him. We also had Lerone Richards, and he was better than what he has been in the past. You know, what I think he showed the other night, he wasn't fluent, you know, and brilliant over the whole duration of the fight, but we saw more glimpses than we have for a long time that he could be for real. And do you know what? I know it's a fight that's not going to be made at the moment. I can see why he gave Chris Eubank Jr. nightmares in sparring. His style is wrong for Eubank.
Yeah, you can see it now. He was pretty good. Once he got going, once he warmed into the fight, I enjoyed that Lerone Richards performance. And you can see why people have been speaking so highly about him. Sniper the Boss came out looking like a wasp, and actually a little bit like Sniper the Wasp with those shorts on. It was quite something. Well, anyway, this week's show, we hear from British boxing hero Ricky Hatton. We've got Harley Benn on the show, the son of the legendary Nigel Benn. We hear from Boyd Jones Jr., who is manning up. And we look ahead to what's coming up in the boxing world. So keep us in your ears and enjoy another week of the Boxing Podcast. Well, let's start with the hitman this week. Ricky Hatton's gym up in Hyde is becoming a bit of a British boxing hotbed. He's already had Nathan Gorman and Tommy Fury in there, amongst others. He's now got Tyson Fury and Billy Joe Saunders up there. So Steve popped up to the gym and had a bit of a chin wag with the hitman.
Rick, always seems to attract big names to your gym, and Billy Joe Saunders is here training. What's it like having a character like Bill around?
It is, to be honest with you. You know, Tyson's a larger than life character. I think I can put a joke across every now and again, and Billy's exactly the same. And it's great. It's great to have him in the gym, and it's great to see him looking so well. I had a bit of bad luck in recent times, but you know, with his weight division, with the, you know, so many big fights on the horizon for him, there, it's nice to see him in such good shape, looking well, happy. And it's like the old days for me when I was back in Billy Graham's Phoenix camp. There used to be me and Michael Gomez and Bobby Rimmer and Stephen Bell, you know, real characters. And as hard as this game is, training in the gym, and it is hard, you know, no one works harder than the lads in this gym, whether it be Tyson, Billy or my boys. But you've got to try and make it a bit fun with a smile on your face. And believe you me, it most certainly is with Billy Joe in the gym.
How do you think Bill will do if he stays at super middleweight, at that new division?
Billy's right there, knocking on the door, isn't he? I mean, ideally, you know, if Billy can have a few regular fights, get his sharpness back, get his stock raised, you know what I mean, and stuff like that, you know. And I think it's just the right timing for Billy. It's the perfect weight division to be in at the minute, because so many big fights are happening, and Billy's right there on the cusp, and we hope he can get a few regular fights and get the big ones he deserves now. He's in a good place, he's happy. And, you know, he's not many miles on the clock, so it's all about timing, you know what I mean, and the right fights at the right time, and I think this could be the right time for him.
Another big fight coming up, Josh Warrington against Kid Galahad. What's your opinion of that fight, and who do you think wins?
It's a very, very good fight, and you've got to heap all the praise on Josh Warrington, you know what I mean? You know, he was an underdog against Selby, come through and he won it. And, you know, fighters are judged on how good a champion they are, you know, by the champions and the fighters they face. You know, he beat Lee Selby, he was an underdog, you know, fought Cal Frampton, another, you know, multiple weight world champion, you know. And Kid Galahad now straight in again. He's another quality fighter. You know, and I used to go down to the Winker Bank gym, you know, with Zanet Zakianov, who was the former world bantamweight champion. And he used to spar with Kid Galahad, and I tell you what, that fella can fight. And you know what I mean? So you've got to take your hat off to Josh Warrington. You know, he's fought Selby, he's fought Frampton. He's not picking another easy option against Kid Galahad. It really is a tough fight. But I think since he's become the champion, Josh, I think he's warmed to it. I think his confidence has gone up. I think he's slipped another couple of gears. And to come off that, you know, that fight, you won't see many better fights in the British boxing ring than the Warrington-Frampton fight. So he's on the crest of a wave, his confidence is up. So while your confidence is up, you might as well fight the people like Kid Galahad, because, you know, your confidence needs to be up when you're fighting people like this.
Who wins the fight?
I'd like to think Josh Warrington. I think he's very, 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 very clever. He's got a very, very high work rate. He doesn't leave you alone. You know, against Cal Frampton, you know, Cal Frampton had the better boxing ability. He was a good judge of distance and stuff like that. But, you know, Josh took that away from him. You know, what you do with, you know, fighters that have maybe more talent than you, you take the talent away by bullying them, rushing them, having the right tactics, keeping on top of them. And I think he'll have to apply similar tactics to Kid Galahad. Kid Galahad's very, very talented. You know, and the thing is, though, when, you know, Carr was very good at, you know, judging the distance, and, you know, when the fighters are stood in front of him, he can pull in range, he can pull out of range and pick him off. And that's why Josh never stood in front of him, you know, coming at different angles. And very, very clever, you know, very clever. He's got a very good boxing brain between his ears, and he'll need it against Kid Galahad. But I think the fact that he's got a good boxing brain, you know, him and his team and his dad seem to get the tactics right. You know, they definitely know what they're doing. And Kid Galahad is very, very talented, but you know what I mean? Sometimes the people with the most talent don't win. It's about having the right tactics and the right game plan. And Josh always seems to get that right. So I think I'd just pick Josh ever so slightly. But trust me, this is as tough as they come.
Well, Steve, good to hear from Ricky Hatton, the hitman as ever. Great way to start the show. Tell me, you're up there, you know, pretty much every week now. What's the vibe like up there?
Yeah, I've popped into the gym a couple times, and one thing it's always been is a happy gym. You know, Ricky Hatton knows when it's time to have a bit of a laugh and a joke with his fighters, and he knows when it's time to train them and crack on. And then when the session finishes, the jokes are aplenty. And I've been up there, I think twice I've been up there when Billy Joe Saunders has been there for this training camp, and he's really settled. He's in that environment. He's really happy. And I think being around people like Ricky, who are pretty relaxed, laid back, as is his own trainer, Ben Davison, is bringing the best out of Ricky. He's very happy up there. And he's, you know, you think now he's been up there for 7 weeks. And I think he went home for one night during the 7 weeks.
Yeah, so that, like a big kind of jokey environment when they're not working. You're up there laughing at their jokes, were you, Steve?
Well, you know what? I think instead of me going there for the next interviews, you should go up there, get in the ring, get a mic and do a stand-up routine.
I think so,
We'll have a clapometer and see what sort of claps you get for your jokes. But the barrister one, I would save that for another audience.
Yeah, I get it, Steve. You laugh at their jokes, you don't laugh at mine. You're trying to fit in with the cool kids. Well, you're not, Steve. You're not Billy Joe Saunders. You're not Tyson Fury. You're not Ricky Hatton. You should laugh at my jokes.
Try a funnier one next week and you might get a crack out of Lillis.
6-0 Harley Benn returns to action on May 18th on the Billy Joe Saunders versus Shefa Issoufi show from Stevenage FC. Now, he's of course the son of British boxing great Nigel Benn, and he's had a bit of a rocky relationship with his dad and his brother Connor. But he seems a man rejuvenated now, and he's raring to go. Here he is with Richard Hubbard at a special Box Clever session at Stevenage ABC from earlier this week.
You're here at Stevenage ABC. You've been doing a little bit of work on behalf of Box Clever, working with some kids, spreading the gospel of boxing. How was it?
Yeah, it was really good. You know, it was good to engage with the kids and things like that, because I'd never had an amateur career myself. So it was good to, and they was all passionate, which you don't really see. Well, in this day and age, kids are only sort of passionate about their phones sort of thing. So it was good to see kids that were passionately boxing and they was itching to get in the ring. So it was good to see, yeah.
Can you relate to it? Is this something you would have lapped up as a youngster?
Yes, I would have, but I never sort of got introduced to it. Even though I come from a boxing family, I was more football. I wish I'd found boxing at a younger age. I mean, how polite the kids were here is good to see.
Well, that's the whole thing about boxing and introducing young kids to boxing, is because it does bring that discipline. It makes people humble. It makes people mix with all elements of the community. And it's so important, especially in today's climate.
Of course, there was all different ages, boys, girls, and that didn't matter at all. Do you know what I mean? Everyone wanted to get in the ring and show what they got and try, and it was really good. And what I noticed was, normally if you're going somewhere full of kids at that age, there's talk about Instagram and Twitter and things like that. No, I didn't hear it once, honestly. I was really surprised. Everyone just wanted to put their gloves on and box. It was really good.
Yeah, I thought they'd be filming it as they go along.
That's what I thought. I thought people were going to be taking selfies every time. But no, it was good. They was focused, and it's Box Clever's really good, and it's a good scheme. I think, I mean, boxing changed my life massively. I was on the wrong path badly due to a football injury. It gave me depression, and I started smoking, drinking, and hanging around with the wrong people. But I know if I had boxing in my life earlier, I may not have taken that path. But when I found boxing, it put me back on the right path and has kept me there. So,
were you diagnosed with depression?
No, I wasn't diagnosed with it. Do you know what? I didn't see a doctor about it. It was just more, I say depression, maybe depression. Well, no, it is the right word. It is. I was depressed because football was my life and it got taken away from me. I didn't even do my injury in football. I was playing on a little scooter and snapped my ankle in half. So, yeah, it was a bad time for me.
Where were you footballing at the time?
I just left Arsenal development and then I was playing for Waltham Cross.
So you did fine, but you spiralled into a dark place once your sort of dream had been taken away from you?
Yeah, 100%. I was like, what do I do now? I had a cast on for 3 months. It was a bad break, so I had a 3-stone cast on my leg and it wasn't one I could walk around on crutches. I was literally bedbound for just over 2 months and then they changed my cast, but put me in a bad place. I mean, imagine being in your bedroom for 2.5 months, put people in a bad place, do you know what I mean? So I didn't channel that in the right way. I started smoking. I started, when my leg was better, I started going out drinking because I knew I couldn't play football, so what else was there to do? And I think at that age of sort of 14, 15, you can be easily led. Basically, what I'm trying to get at is boxing really did save me from doing stupid stuff. And
it took you a while to come around to boxing, though, didn't it? 100%,
yeah. I mean, I was in that sort of bad place for about 4 to 5 years, so it wasn't like a little phase. It was a big chunk of my teenage years that I was in doing the wrong things. And it wasn't till 18, 19 that I decided to put some gloves on and crack on with it.
I mean, it was a little dabble at white collar boxing first, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I'd say it was more sort of gym spars kind of thing, like not no ticket sales or anything like that. It was just, I didn't even want to do it as a career when I started. I was just doing it to get me out of the place that I was in, and it made me feel good doing boxing, hitting the bag and things like that. And then I was in the gym for about a year with Ben and the boys and got beat up for about 18 months every day, and then decided to progress on and make my pro debut.
I remember talking to you back ahead of your debut, and it's remarkable looking at you now, but you were getting ready to campaign as a super middleweight.
I had 2 fights at super middleweight, and I don't know why. It was because I was fat, that's why. I didn't diet properly, and it was all getting used to it though, and I hate dieting to this day. I absolutely hate it, but it's got to be done because you've got to be in good condition. But yeah, I can mean, I look at some super middleweights now. I mean, look at Callum Smith or someone like that. I'm only 5'10", so I would have been, yeah, it wasn't the right weight, and now I'm moving down to welter and see how I get on there.
How long did it take the penny to drop to realise that you need to buckle down and it's all about getting your weight and your discipline and everything else?
If you look, I had a long layoff, about 9 months between my second and my third fight. And if you look at my second fight, my fight looks literally like 2 completely different people. You could say to someone, that's 2 different people, and they wouldn't tell you it's not. I think then I realised, because my first fight, I managed to stop him in the start of the second round. But my second fight went a distance, and I got hit a few times. So I thought, oh, that was not nice. I remember literally feeling so sick after because I was so knackered. But I think it was because of the extra weight I was carrying. I was carrying more than a stone that I didn't need to. So I thought, right, it's time to crack on now. This game's hard.
How do you feel when you developed as a fighter now? Because, I mean, not being rude, but obviously you didn't have the most finesse when you first started.
No, of course, I don't think I had. In my debut, I don't think I showed one bit of skill. If I'm genuinely, I was just loading up on punches. Every punch I threw took so much out of me because I was just trying to knock him out. And do you know what? I wouldn't like that. I feel I stopped him with like a flurry of 20 punches, and I don't know what would have happened if he had come back at me after them 20 punches. Honestly, I was ready to hit the deck. I was knackered. Yeah, there was no skill. But on May the 18th, I'm fighting. I genuinely believe I'm going to display a very skillful performance, and people are going to see that I'm very serious about this and I can mix with the best in this country in the next few years.
I was just going to come to that. You are May 18th at Stephen Hughes FC on the undercard of Billy Joe Saunders v Shifa Asufi. It's a return to a big show for you, yeah, because you've sort of been sort of learning your craft a little bit on the small hall circuit recently.
Yeah, I mean, my first two, they were at York Hall and the Brentwood Centre, so it wasn't massive, but they was on TV on Box Nation, so they were packed out. And then I've been on small hall which I've appreciated because I've been learning my craft and things like that. And I don't think I would have been ready for big, massive shows at that stage. But now I'm honestly ready to go and showcase. And I believe I'm someone that does better under pressure. And the pressure of the cameras, the big crowd, the big stadium, I think that will all be in my favour, because it was just like going back to my football. If I played a better team, I would play better. And the opponents that they've got in mind for me, they're not easy opponents. So,
going back to when you said you were sort of trying to blast people out, particularly in your first fight, did you feel any pressure in relation to your name, your father, the fact that he was known as such an explosive character who literally, he's got a showreel of KOs. Yeah. Did that bring its own pressure for you?
It did in my first fight, yeah, and I think I thought about that far too much, because it's not me, I tried to be like that, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I've got power. And my first fight, I don't think it was power that stopped the guy, if I'm honest with you. I just think it was overwhelmed him. My second fight, I displayed a bit of power with a knockdown, but now I really believe I'll be able to execute power and skill all in this fight. So, yeah. But it did, I did have pressure on me. Well, no one was really putting it on me. I was putting it on myself.
It was a talking point, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I remember looking on Twitter the day before, let's see if he's like his dad and things like that. I thought, oh, no.
need that.
Yeah, I need that, don't I? And but no, I have a completely different style to my dad. I mean, there's things, movements, mannerisms in the ring that look like my dad. But I've got my brother fights as well. And I think we all are different.
Talk to me about change of trainer. What's the catalyst for that?
First, I just want to say a massive thank you to Lenny Butcher, who got me to 5-0. So I was with him from the start of my career to fight 5. I don't know, do you know what it was? I just thought I fancied a change up. I feel that I needed to work harder. Not that Lenny wasn't working me hard, just I just wanted to switch it up and learn more things and new things, because I hadn't had that experience of going to different gyms before. I'd only been in one place. Honestly, it's done me the world of good. The world of good, which is taking, like I said, no disrespect to Lenny at all. I love Lenny, and he'll be a friend for life. But I'm now training out of Fort Galaxy Gym. I train at Ade and Terry Dunstan, and they've brought me on leaps and bounds. Honestly, I see a massive difference in myself. I didn't want to be stagnant, do you know what I mean? I wanted to change it up again. I wanted to take myself out of my comfort zone, because I started getting into a comfort zone. I knew how I'd be sparring every week. I knew what I'd be doing, and I wanted to take myself out of my comfort zone, and I have done. And I think that's good for a boxer, because you can be taken out of your comfort zone in the first 30 seconds of a round.
Don't mind me saying, you look like you're in a good place at the moment. You sort of got a lot more, well, I don't know, a bit more maturity about you, a calmness. Has kind of making things right with your brother had something to do with that?
Yeah, I mean, as people know, me and my dad and my brother have had a rocky relationship for all of my life, and it's good. At the end of the day, they're family. I've said some childish things. My brother said some childish things. But we haven't really done anything wrong to each other. Do you know what I mean? It's just
been all talk, isn't it? Interviews and
pettiness. Obviously, there was reasons why we didn't get on, personal stuff. It was all petty, and now me and my brother, we get on really well, and we support each other. He was at my last fight, and it was good to have him there. And
you've got to look at it in the way, but your dad's in Australia, you've got your mum here, but together you're going to be stronger, aren't you?
Of course, we're family, and we only live 10 minutes down the road from each other. Why not?
Made a difference to your outlook?
Do you know what? I feel more at peace, just with myself and just with life. And like people will say, I think a happy fighter is a more dangerous fighter. So I'm sure that on May the 18th, it will be my best performance. And yeah, because of the boxing and the training that I'm doing, but where I'm at mentally as well.
Steve, that was quite a listen, but let me ask you this. Boxing history is littered with fighting sons. You look at Marvis Frazier, Floyd and Floyd Mayweather, and the Eubanks. Tell me, how difficult do you think it is to carry on the family name?
If your dad's been a great fighter, and you haven't got the mentality, it can become a horrible strain on you. And I think there's signs that Harley Benn, for example, is starting to cope a bit better. He's pretty much, you know, estranged with his dad. He has been on and off. I don't know what the relationship is at the moment. And, you know, there was good and bad being said in the build-up to his first fight. And he only recently reunited with Conor Benn, where there was quite a rocky relationship. His half-brother. So, you know, maybe there's a sign that he's starting to cope with it a bit better than what he has been. But the pressures it can bring is crazy. And I'll never forget one, maybe not so much well-known to mainstream boxing public, but Steve Foster Sr. from Manchester and his dad's his son, Steve Jr. Now, Steve Jr. seemed to live with the pressure quite well, pretty quiet kid, so, you know, he wouldn't get on top. But it was the dad who struggled with his son in training him. He trained him for a few fights, said, no more, I can't do any more.
Oh, right.
Stop training him. So he just couldn't. He found it too hard, the emotional side, working with his son. It become too hard. And then, you know, I speak to boxers who, I don't want to name them, and I know one ex-boxer who's just had a son. And so he can't stop his son boxing. But what he does, he's moved all his boxing trophies out the front room and they're not on show in the house.
Wow, it's because he doesn't want to encourage his son to become a boxer.
The pressures it puts on sons, it depends on their mentality. I mean, someone like Floyd Mayweather had that hot and cold relationship with his dad and or throughout their career, and they got together at the end shortly after his dad, Floyd Mayweather, stopped training Ricky Hatton. You know, it's very, very difficult for him. You know, you name Marvis and Joe Frazier. Fancy having Joe Frazier as your dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Eubank ones, we've seen it where the dad's made the story more about him. And whereas we've had the Danny Garcia one where the dad made the story about him early in Danny Garcia's career. But a lot of that was to take the pressure off his son. You know,
yeah.
It really, really did work that, you know, that sort of thing when he was upcoming fighter. You know, you're seeing Danny Jr. come more to the fore. You know, you've had somewhere where it's really worked. Leon Spinks was a world heavyweight champion, one of the biggest upsets ever against Muhammad Ali. And his son Corey went and won the IBF. I think it was IBF World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah. And then he lost it to Zab Judah, wasn't he? That's the one. Yeah. No, it's an interesting thought, because I was thinking, you know, all this pressure put on the son, and, you know, his dad was a boxer. You look at someone like Floyd Mayweather, where it just didn't affect him. You know, look what he's gone and done.
Yeah, I think it flags up, you know, when fighters don't handle it as well. I think it flags up more so when young fighters are struggling to make the impact when something's been expected. I mean, there's going to be one in the next year that's going to get a lot of publicity when Ricky Hatton's son, Campbell, turns over. I mean, that's going to be pressure, because Ricky Hatton wasn't just one, a great fighter. He was Britain's most popular fighter ever. The numbers speak for itself in what he took abroad. Now, that taking 35,000 to Las Vegas speaks for your popularity in my book. You know, Absolutely. Even after he'd lost fights, he was attracting 60,000 people to the city of Manchester Stadium. That's popularity. And a lot of those people that followed Ricky weren't necessarily hardcore boxing fans. They were blokes you'll meet in the street. So they'll be saying to Campbell, I remember your dad boxing. So even to get reminded of that every single day when he walks around the area of Manchester he comes from, so I was going to your fight. I wonder if you'd be as good as your dad, because he'll be on the streets out there.
It's good. Yeah, I don't know what the plan is with regards to Campbell turning pro, if that is something on their mind, but I'm sure, you know, if and when he does, he's going to be a big star, at least, you know, for that pro debut. That's going to be a lot of fanfare that in Manchester. Ricky Hatton's son turning pro, imagine that. Goodness me.
I mean, it will be. And I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm guessing. I mean, he's got a, I'm told he's got a very much a pro style. He does a lot of training with his dad and with his uncle, Matthew Hatton. You know, I'm not privy to anything, but you'd imagine they're honing him for when he turns professional. Now, whether Ricky will train him or whether it'll be Matthew or both of them, I don't know. But he does work with his uncle, Matthew, and his dad.
Well, back on Harley Benn, you've met Harley Benn, I'm sure, a few times. What are your impressions of this young man?
As a person, I really like him. I mean, he's a very pleasant kid. He's a really good talker. So professionally, as a journalist, I've enjoyed being in his company. Now, as a fighter, I wasn't impressed early doors. I've got to put my hands up. I mean, I saw, you know, the first fight with Dominic Zubku, he got the win. And I remember that second fight against Paul Cummings at Brentwood that we had on Box Nation. Now,
yeah,
Paul isn't, you know, he gets in the ring, he's a tough man, and he, you know, another one who leaves it in there. But, you know, he rarely wins. But that night, Harley was flat to the balls to beat somebody like that. And I thought, whoa. But since then, you know, he had about 9-10 months off after that fight. And he's got better and better in the last four fights. There's a long, long way to go, Dev. And I'm not going to start saying we're talking of a future champion here. But what I think you've got to say in his favour is that he's improving with every single fight.
He's improving and he's knuckling down. All the report cards are telling us that Harley Benn is knuckling down now and, you know, really getting on with it. But something you mentioned there, his second fight, I think it was against Paul Cummings. Go and look that up, because Paul Cummings, I don't know if he's still in action, I think he has the longest neck I've ever seen in boxing. What do you think? Talk to me.
You know what? I remember that fight, and he has. He most probably has, Paul.
Huge. So much.
Yeah, he's still boxing, definitely. I've seen his reports. I'm not sure what his record is now. I'd imagine he must be getting close to 40, 50 fights or something now.
Yeah. Well, Harley Benn is back in action on May 18th at the Lamex Stadium, home of Stevenage FC, on the undercard of Billy Joe Saunders against Shefat Issoufi, Joe Joyce against Ustinov. You got Brad Foster in there against Ashley Lane. It's really racking up, that show. And also, another young man on that show. Well, you could say he's a boy, although he wants to be treated as a man, but called a boy. It's lovable lightweight and former Southern Area champion Boy Jones Jr. Now, Richard Hubbard popped in to see him last week, and this really is Boy like you've never heard him before.
We're at the iBox gym, Bromley, with a slightly unfamiliar face to what we're used to seeing here, Boy Jones Jr. Now, you're now a resident of the iBox gym.
Yeah, no, I'm loving it down here. They've took me under their wing, and yeah, really. Thank you for them for having me down here. But it's really good, Jimmy. You've got a lot of champions and that. You've got loads of boys down here, and it's really good down here. To be honest, they're all roughly around my age, so banter's really funny down here. All the boys.
Now then, I know it's difficult to talk about, but I've asked a lot of fighters over the years, and it's nothing unique to you. You had to make the decision to change trainer. You've done it. You were with Dom Negus for a long time. Now you're coming to train here. I mean, was it awkward for you?
It's I don't think it's never not awkward, is it? Because I was with Dom for about 4 or 5 years, weren't I? But sometimes you need a change in it, and sometimes a change can do bad for you, but sometimes a change can be good for you. And to be honest, a lot of people have been telling me he's brought the best out of me. I've been starting to box a bit more and using my feet, looking different in the gym, inspiring and that. I mixed changed my style massively. Mickey Burke, who I'm with now, but down the iBox as well. I'm more of a boxer. This is the reason why I come down to his gym, because I like the styles like Bradley Skeet, Lerone Richards and all that. I like using my jab and that. As also, you know, with my career, like, I've never had an amateur career, but I think this was the right move for me because of how they all box and be flash, slick and that. I love all that slick style and all that. So they've changed my style massively, and yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying training. I got the love back a bit as well. I went through a little stage of not enjoying the sport. I didn't really want to do it. My mum and my missus were beating me up, saying, "No, come on, you've got to get back into it." But to be honest, Mick's done really well, weaning me back into it, and yeah, just to get me back in the gym, and then yeah, well, me and now, you know.
It's a chance when you make a change, but for somebody to have a fresh look at your abilities, to look at the raw materials, and maybe look at a slightly different way of employing them.
Yeah, no, like, obviously, my style was, like, sit on them as shots. I thought, like, I used to fight like a small fighter, didn't I? I used to try to walk you down, hands up and that. And to be honest, it doesn't do really good for your head, does it? I've always wanted a box. I've always wanted to be on my jab and that, and I've learned so much. It feels like it's going back to school. Like, the first day of training, I went back to Jasmine, my fiance, and I was like, "Jazz, I can't believe it. I really loved it." She went, "What do you mean?" I was like, "I can't believe what they've taught me. I really can't." And like, I was so happy. And then every day I come back, even though it's a trek for me, it's worth it, to be honest, to learn what I'm learning. It's really fun, and it's really bringing out the best in me. I know everyone's saying you can't really start your full career again, but I can. I'm starting my career again, and it's really really fun. Like, I ain't had an amateur fight. I'd all unlicensed, and I have learnt the hard way. I'm 22 years old. Maybe if I'd done it later on in my career, I couldn't learn that. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, they say. But I'm learning loads and my style's changing. All the boys are saying to me, come up to me every day, oh, Ben, we're looking forward to your fight again and that. And it's really nice and I'm really enjoying it and I'm loving life at the moment.
So you're still playing that daft card, are you? And I mean, I know for a fact you're not as daft as you like to make out. Over, you've played on that, haven't you?
You know what? Mick and Alan sat down with me and said, look, this boy looks got to stop. You got to, like, I've got a kid now, I've got a son, believe it or not. You can't be stupid in this sport and I've got to start using my brain. I am a smart kid, believe it or not. To be honest, it's like a get out of jail free card being thick, like pretending to be dumb and that. Like people don't talk too much. That's why I really do it. Like I can get away with being stupid. I am growing up. I want to get an house for my son and stuff like this. Boxing, you can't play with boxing. So I'm just, this is me being, I'm rebranding myself. I'm Ben now. I'm not playing the boy card no more.
Now, you touched on it. I just want to take you back a little bit where you sort of said about getting really down in the dumps and ready to jack it in. Now, you've mentioned before, but as a consequence, perhaps, of your parting away as a trainer, it cost you your sponsors and things like that. So it's a real sort of hardship and sacrifice you've had to make, making your way over here financially and everything.
To be honest, I don't like playing on the card. I ain't saying I was that, like suffering. Loads of things happened at once for me. Obviously, the trainer, the sponsors, I was going to lose my flat. Loads of things happened. And it was like my son was not well, in and out of hospitals. It caused me and my missus to argue. I had to find work, couldn't find work, and this and that. And just loads of things happened at once. And you know what? I didn't. And lose it and change. I think changing the trainer as well, a lot of people don't want to talk to me no more, like all my old friends and that. It's a load of politics behind it all. And I was a bit lonely in my head and stuff like that. My mum was trying to talk to me and I didn't want to talk to no one. That's why me and my missus was arguing, fell out a little bit because I weren't talking, because I don't like talking about what's going on. Like, and I was a bit embarrassed about the month, because I've always, like, because Jazz is on maternity leave while she's just finishing. And I was a bit embarrassed, not couldn't pay the rent and this and that. And it was just embarrassing for a dad saying I can't pay the rent and stuff like this. And it was just, to be honest, the boy Bradley Skeet, I've got a shout out to him, he helped me out massively. Money, like, I don't want to say it, but he helped me out with money, clothes. He gave me some hand-me-downs from his old clothes. Mickey was paying for my meals as well from Athlete's Kitchen. He's giving some clothes to my son as well, like loads of things, loads of people. Alan's helping me out, like down here. Just loads of things. I ain't got sponsors, but all my brothers, my mum, my brothers who are giving me money, they're sponsoring me. My families are sponsoring me, believe it or not. My close friends, Jack, Ashley and that, they're all giving me money so I can make it down here. And I really appreciate it. I'm blessed with good friends, I'd say. I really am, and it really shocked me how many of my friends would help me, saying, Ben, I'll give you this to, like, obviously I've got to pay them back.
They're investing in you, aren't they?
Yeah, no, and I hope they realise how much they're doing for me, because I'll get to come down there, perform, and then later on when I fight, I'll get to provide for my family, and I really appreciate my friends and my mum. Jasmine's been buying all the food and that. Like, it's a bit embarrassing for the man of the house not can't provide for the fact, like, for my kid. But
you know what though, this could end up being the making of you, wouldn't it? To go through this hardship, and as you just saw all the compartments out in your life, which ones are worth persevering with, which ones aren't, and almost have to start a clean break and start again, and it's probably a great opportunity to do that.
It's a bit like that film Hitch, I'd say, you know, when he had everything and then this big money thing happened. You know what, everyone's saying, oh, it's all going to get better, it's going to get better, it's going to get better. To be honest, I had my wallet nicked yesterday. My son was in hospital the weekend, but it's slowly getting better and better, like things are slowing down, but everything just hit me at once. And then I just thought, oh, I just can't be bothered for this, I really can't. Like, I was. But to be honest, I just thank everyone just for helping me out and looking after me. But things are getting better. Like, Andy Ailey, my manager, is proper is helping me out as well. I can't thank him enough.
You've actually come from being the boy prodigy where everything was going one way. You know, you had a major promoter. You know, you were flying. You didn't have to work. You had decent sponsors. You probably thought he's on Easy Street. Those sort of things are never going to last. You're always going to find the real world sooner or later.
But to be honest, I've always struggled, like me and my mum and all my brothers have struggled as a kid, so it's second nature to me. But obviously we got it easy. Like, listen, you're given, like, I was 18 years old, I was fighting on these big cards, I was enjoying life, but I was still humble in my head. I've never got big-headed, and I really thank for Frank Warren for putting me on the big show still and sticking by me after all these like things has happened. But you realise when you haven't got nothing, when you have something, you got to like look after it a bit more and stuff like that. But obviously now I've got a son, so where any money I get is going towards him. I want to buy an house for him and stuff like that.
Sure you will. I just want to take you back, unfortunately, to your last fight. It was a WBO European fight, a lightweight against Craig Evans.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to go into too much detail, but you weren't well in the build-up to that fight, and you probably really shouldn't have been in there.
I shouldn't have been in there. I needed to, that's my fault. I should have told people, but it's one of the things. But to be honest, like, everyone thinks big about a loss. It's a loss is a loss. Like, Tottenham and Arsenal lose all the time. They come back the next week and win the Champions League. Although, actually, they don't. No disrespect
to any exaggeration there, Ben.
Yeah, a bit disrespect to anyone in North London. But, yeah, no, but listen, in life you learn. So you don't lose, you learn. And I learned from that fight.
No shame losing to Craig Evans. I mean, he's a seasoned campaigner, isn't he? He's been in with some, you know, real top boys.
Yeah, he's a top man. Like, if I'm a kid that fought on their licence, I didn't think I was going to win the Southern Area. I'm fighting for a WBO European title. It's not a big title for most people, but it's a big title for me. So even just getting a chance. And to be honest, another reason why I took that fight is I got a chance for all my family to go out dressed really nice. It was on that big show, dinner show. They all got suited up. They enjoyed the night. To be honest, I was happy at that because all my family got dressed up, come watch me fight. They was all in suits. My mum loved it. Jasmine loved it. All my brothers loved it. They get to see the man from the script. I'm not into music and that. I don't know his name. But they got photos with famous people and that. I was happy with that. It's a learning curve, but it's one of them things. Boxing, everyone's cares about all these paper, was it not records, but like keeping the O and stuff. But it doesn't matter. Like, come on, you lose, man up and go on again. March on. Look at how many fights did Pacquiao and Muhammad Ali lose?
Quite a few.
Bernard Hopkins lost his first fight. What's the guy commentator?
Johnny Nelson.
He lost his first. Five on a spin. So what? He got up and might become a world champion. So, like, there we go. Come on.
Now then, finally, May 18th, yeah. Stevenage, the Lamex Stadium. Nothing's really been confirmed at this stage. It probably has, but not telling us. But one thing we do know, you're going to be in a title fight, and that must be great news for you.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, down this gym, that we always prepare hard. And, so we're ready for anything. I can't wait to get out there. I've always wanted to fight at a stadium. I can't wait for I'm looking forward to that. We're training hard. So we've got good top sparring. Danny Carr, Sanji Saho, I've been sparring some top boys and that. We were just ready for that.
Going to see a new you in there?
Yeah, we are. We're going to see Man Jones Jr. No, we can't really call myself that. But no, definitely. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning every day. It's really enjoyable down here. Like, you see that other boys train, they train really seriously, and little things like I've been taught how to throw a jab properly.
So we're gonna see a jab.
Yeah, you're gonna see a jab. You're gonna see me a box for once. Like, I'm like what Mickey's done for me, like training. He's changed my style mentally. I was sparring the other day and he rang me up with like, Ben, like, even all the boys down in the gym, that's a different boy, Jones Jr. I was like, oh, well, it's what I've been doing, so what I've been learning, so yeah.
Well, Steve, this is another one, isn't it? Just like Harley Benn, you really want the likes of Boy Jones Jr. to just do well, don't you?
Yeah, look, if you meet Boy Jones Jr. and you don't like him, I think you're the one with something wrong to you. He's very warm, very genuine, very honest, very open, likes to laugh, and go back to the honesty and openness. We saw that or heard that in that brilliant interview there from Richard Hubbard. He split with Dominic Negus, which, you know, was a bit of a shock in boxing, given how close they were. But, you know, this happens a lot in boxing. Fighters move on, trainers move on. And he's now with Mickey Burke and at the iBox gym in Bromley, where Alan Smith trains all these fighters. He seems very happy there. And not only are we losing the boy, we're going to see a new Ben Jones in the ring at Stevenage when he boxed, with the, you know, judging by the stuff that they've taught him. And you know the boys who train at the iBox, a lot of it is about boxing and silky skills more than showing you can have a fight that Boy Jones, Ben Jones, whatever we're going to call him now, prefers to be known as. But I really hope it works for him, the move to the iBox gym. There's a lot of lovely people at that gym, and he's the sort of kid who will get a lot of love from those people because he is so genuine.
Yeah, great place for him, and we're looking forward to seeing what impact this new trainer, you know, the new people around him, looking forward to seeing what impact that has on Boy Jones Jr. He's back in action on May 18th at Stevenage FC. That's a bit of a show there that's coming together. Of course, Billy Joe Saunders in against Shefaat Issoufi for the interim WBO World Super Middleweight title. Joe Joyce is taking on quite a late notice opponent, quite a good for a late notice opponent in terms of Alexander Ustinov. He's taking him on in a couple of weeks. And of course, there's Brad Foster that's been added against Ashley Lane for the English title. We're looking forward to it. That's May 18th. It's going to be live on BT Sport. Now then, let's talk about Box Nation, the channel of champions. Schedule's starting to fill up a little bit, isn't it, Steve? Come on, talk to me.
It's filling up, Dev. We've got a stacked week coming up. We'll go off to California this weekend. Stockton, California is where the cameras are. I'm not sure where that is in California. I've got a feeling it's up near San Francisco. There we've got one of the Russian crushers, Artur Beterbiev. He defends his IBF light heavyweight crown against an American Bosnian, should we say, Radivojin Kalajic, is how it's pronounced.
Is that how it's pronounced, though, Steve? Is it?
Radivojin.
I'm just checking.
Radivojin Kalajic. Anyway, that's who he's fighting. I think it's the second defense of his IBF championship. Beterbiev, the only world champion in boxing with a 100% KO record in all his fights. So we know what to expect this weekend. But the Bosnian isn't the worst fighter. I got a very bad decision against him in 2016 against Marcus Brown. Was robbed that night. Since then, he's had injury problems. But his last two fights, he's won in a round and he's back. And also on that bill, someone we touched on at the top of the show, Jerwin Ankaihas, who's defending his IBF Super Flyweight Championship against his Japanese mandatory contender, Ryuichi Funai. Funai is one of these guys who can neglect the fence. A lot of these Japanese fighters just plows forward and loves a tear-up. Well, that should be a war. But what do we got from Monday on Box Nation? We got a week of wars. It's War Week from Monday the 6th of May till Thursday the 9th. Four nights, 4.5 hours of wars, 28 fights being shown in all. We got Lomachenko Martinez, Saucedo Zapovinia, which is a great fight, Belcher and Vargas, and of course the fight that got Box Nation off to a cracking start way back in 2011, Liam Walsh against
Appleby.
Yeah, what a fight that was. And we finished, the last fight we show is Andy Lee against Jackson on Thursday the 9th. Five rounds of mayhem and the most dramatic finish you could ever imagine. And then on the next night, the cameras are in London for Ultimate Boxer 3. One night, eight fighters, one night, all in the ring, having tear-ups at the end. One winner, and he goes home with a load of dosh. And on the Saturday, the 11th of May, we have a rematch of Miguel Burchell and Francisco Vargas, who delivered a brutal battle back in 2017.
Ooh, Vargas,
Vargas was stopped on his feet in the 11th round, and Burchell, you know, become WBC super featherweight champion. And that's the fight that War Week is celebrating, because that will be a war without a shadow of a doubt. Also on that bill, Isaac Dogbe attempts to win back the WBO super bantamweight championship when he fights Emmanuel Navarrete, the man who outpointed him in an upset in his recent defense at the back end of last year.
Well, question on that, Steve, just quickly. How do you feel about him going straight into the rematch with Navarrete? Is it the thing to do? Should he have stepped away and honed his craft a bit more? Or what do you think of it all?
Well, you thought he might have had an interim fight, but at the end of the day, he's been told this is when the rematch is. It's when the rematch is happening. And I hope, he's been very quiet this time. I've been trying to track him down for a couple of weeks to come on the podcast. I can't get his reply from his people or anything. And usually they're so quick at offering him forward for interviews. I'm not making excuses for the last fight. Navarrete was the best man on the night, but it was absolutely madness. Dogbay was training in Ghana 1 week, London the next week, America the next week. Then he was back in London with all different trainers. It was just madness the way he prepared for that fight. And he's got to bounce back, because you think if he loses again, he's very much to the back of the queue. And you know, a lot of world champions lose their titles, Dev, and they don't get a quick chance to win it back. He's got a great chance to win his title back. But I think you made a point the other week, and you may be right. Has Navarrete got his measure for good?
That's what it feels like. It feels like one of those styles make fights kind of fights, and maybe every time they fight, it will be Navarrete who comes out on top. But hopefully not. I'm a bit of a Dogbay fan. He follows me on Twitter. Little saint there for you, Steve. Does he follow you?
He does. He's a good man. Isaac's a lovely kid. I mean, you know, he's a fantastic story. You know, he fights out of Ghana, London, still lives in London, in Kennington. And just a real, you know, you've been around him, you've met him, a real charming kid.
Yeah, he is indeed. So, yeah, loads coming up on Box Nation then. We're looking forward to that. And, yeah, well, keep us updated every week, Steve. I like hearing what's coming up on the Channel of Champions. Well, this Saturday night in Las Vegas is one of the most anticipated fights of the year. Canelo Alvarez and Danny Jacobs clash in a middleweight title unification. Tell me, Steve, where's your head at with this one?
Outstanding fight, isn't it, Dev? It really is. My head, where it's been since day one, and I've been quite big since day one on this, is Saul Canelo Alvarez winning the fight. I just think he's just developed into a very, very good fighter, you know, in recent times. I mean, I know there's the Golovkin controversies, but he's just getting better and better. I've just got a feeling that one of the big selling points, or if you want to call it selling fights or side angle to this fight, is that the judges are gonna do him a big favour over 12 rounds. Now, I think it goes 12 rounds, but I think there'll be little doubt at the end who's in command. I think he's a really intelligent fighter. I think his IQ's improved in the ring. His defense has got so much better. And, you know, okay, there have been sort of, you want to call them walkovers, or the easier fights, shall we say, Amir Khan, Wade Chavez, and, you know, Liam Smith. But that second fight against Golovkin, I think he showed he was surreal. I know he's not everybody's favorite. I think there's question marks against Jacobs' chin a little bit. You know, he has had shaky moments. I don't think Canelo will stop him, but I think at the end of 12 rounds, he would have just worked enough and he'll be in a clear lead.
I'm with you, Steve. I'm a Canelo man here. Tell me about the Danny Jacobs. There's been talk about his punching power, but then you look at his last four fights have gone the distance. So is he really that much of a punching? You know, has he got that much punching power?
Look, he hits hard. I mean, you know, his power's got to be respected. You know, we've seen him put people away, 29th, you know, people that, I mean, smaller guys, but tough guys like, you know, Sergio Mora was put away a couple of times, you know.
You had him down, by the way. Yeah, Mora put him down.
And there's the questions about, you know, the chin. You know, Caleb Truax, is decent. You know, he stopped good fighters. You know, I think a lot rides on the what many people see as a robbery against Golovkin. But you look at the last three fights, Derevyanchenko, Selecki, Arias, he's beat all them on points. Now, you fancy Alvarez to have stopped a couple of them, would you?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think either of them are big monstrous punches, you know.
Yeah, I think, yeah, okay, Alvarez might have impressed a bit more against them. I just fancy Alvarez strongly, and I have since day one. What I love about Alvarez, and I might be turning back the clock here a bit when I talk about him.
Go on.
I can't stop thinking of that Floyd Mayweather fight. And it was way back in, it was nearly six years ago now, in September 2013. The second half of that fight, he wanted to be anywhere but the MGM Grand Garden ring, honestly. But since that fight, you know what? You went away and you thought, will he ever recover again? Because that was mentally, he was just done that night. Mayweather just abused him that night. You know, he'd played with him. And the way he's bounced back since then is nothing short of fantastic. And I've got nothing but praise for him. You know, I'm a big, big fan. You know, you can pick holes maybe in the Rocky Fielding win, but that was just an exercise in stepping up to pick up a version of another world title. No big issue with that. Rocky got beat. He went home very well paid. And, you know, I think a lot of the stick he gets is unfounded, and I hope that after this fight on Saturday night, he's really delivered, and people are saying he you know, you can class him as one of the Mexican greats.
Yeah, I think so. Those two Golovkin fights were epic, by the way, and I think they, the second one in particular, really cemented him as my favourite fighter. I said it. I think he's my favourite active fighter, Steve.
You know what? And another point from that. Okay, Golovkin's ageing. We accept that. But from those two fights, who's the fighter who's still kicking on, and who's the fighter who's possibly on the slide? I rest my case.
There you go. There you go. So, well, let's catch up on that one next week. I'm looking forward to that fight, and war Canelo. Well, it's that time of the week again, Steve. I'm looking at you, you're looking at me, and your fire, the fire that I'm seeing behind your eyes is raging. I've got to know. Please tell me, what you talking about, Lewis?
Talking about heavyweight matches that have been made this week. Big Joe Joyce against Alexander Ustinov. Anthony Joshua against Big Andy Ruiz. Looking around, I don't think they've been met particularly fairly by many people. And that's annoyed me because they're okay fights. There is nothing wrong. You telling me Joe Joyce in his 9th visit professional fight fighting Alexander Ustinov at 23 days notice? Come on. What do you expect him to fight? You know, how hard it is to get good heavyweights at short notice for fair money is becoming impossible in boxing. At 23 days notice, there is nothing wrong with Alexander Ustinov. Now, okay, let's be honest, he wasn't great in his last fight against Michael Hunter. I think that was in Monte Carlo, was it, in November?
Yeah.
He didn't look good that night at all. But before then, he was being spoken of as fighting, you know, of getting world title fights and getting up there again. It just does my head in that he's getting slammed like that, like he is for this fight. It's 23 days notice. It's like Andy Ruiz, you know, 4 or 5 weeks notice to fight Anthony Joshua. Who did expect Joshua to fight? You look at the heavyweight rankings, you've got Fury, Wilder, Joshua. After that, you've got a lot of heavyweights where there's nothing between them. And Andy Ruiz is one of them. And I think he'll give a good account of himself against Joshua in the early stages of that fight. I just don't get what do people want Joe Joyce to box at 3 weeks' notice? What do they want Anthony Joshua to box when Jarrell Miller pulls out? Well, he has to pull out because of his drug issues. And that's what I want to know.
Yeah, well, I think the issue with Ruiz has just been because of what he looks like, essentially. And that's why, because he's very memeable, isn't he? You know, there's people just say he's a big fat man, and you put him up next to Anthony Joshua, and it doesn't make for pleasant viewing if you're promoting that fight. But
it's a hard sell, I get that. But, you know, when it's short notice, it is so hard getting people in for the right deal. It's a business, and the finances have got to add up for everybody. We've got to take that into account. Eddie Hearn claims, you know, he offered $7 million in the end for Luis Ortiz. Now, if Luis Ortiz, $7 million that is, if Luis Ortiz turned that down, then that's their problem. They got serious issues. You know, and he's got Andy Ruiz. He doesn't look the part, you know, he's hardly body beautiful. But he's got decent hands. He's not the worst in the world. And it's not the ideal fight. But at 4 or 5 weeks' notice, you're not going to get much better than that. And Ruiz is as good as a lot of the B-level contenders out there. And as I say, with Joe Joyce, he's fighting someone that has been beating semi-decent heavyweights. Might have lost his last couple of fights to Manuel Char, Michael Hunter. But at 3 weeks' notice, that's a decent test for Joe Joyce, especially because he's going to be in something big, July 13, O2 Arena in London.
Yeah, and they are the noises that we're hearing. The thing that I'll say about Ustinov is, you know, Michael Hunter beat Ustinov, and then suddenly Michael Hunter was in the Anthony Joshua sweepstakes for June the 1st. He was touted as one of the potential opponents, maybe getting down to a list of as short as 3. So if you beat Ustinov, does that mean you're in the highest stakes possible? You can get the biggest fight out there? I don't know, but I don't think it's that bad an opponent. I don't think it can be poo-pooed, really, especially at this late notice.
Too many people ridiculing these fights. There are some, you know, there's a fair amount of sensible people. There's a lot saying, and you've got to, you know, I can't emphasise enough, it's what you can get at notice.
Good rant, Steve Lillis. God, you got some heavyweight stuff on your mind this week, haven't you, Steve?
Oh, I always got heavyweight stuff on my mind. I hope we'll have a load of heavyweights on the podcast next week.
Well, heavyweights maybe next week, but this weekend, live on Box Nation, it's, of course, the big light heavyweight, undefeated Artur Beterbiev. What do you think? Is he the top dog at light heavyweight? Or is it Kovalev? Is it Vozdik?
Oh, it's a real hard one, isn't it? Oh, mate, you're going to have to... You've thrown that one right at me. Oh,
give it to me. Who do you think?
I would go right now. I will go Gvozdik. I'd go Bivol, Kovalev, Beterbiev. Now, the reason Beterbiev is fourth is purely his inactivity. That's why. I think Gvozdik, he's the man who beat the man, which everyone seems to go down. So I think you'll go with him. You know, we couldn't really see what he'd done against Ungumbo last time. I think that was about five rounds when Ungumbo got injured. Bivol started going the distance at times now, hasn't he? You know, Kovalev was brilliant in his last fight against Elidio Alvarez, and let's hope he's going to fight Anthony Yard very soon. But Beterbiev, I'll go after that purely because of his inactivity.
Yeah, look, I was very much on the Bivol hype train. I thought, oh, this is it. This is the guy coming through. But then when he starts going the distance with an old John Pascal and going the distance with Joe Smith, Isaac Chilembo, well, everyone goes the distance with him. But, you know, it's just flatlined a little bit. Yeah. And that's for me. And then that happened around the same time Kovalev, he's supposed to be done. And suddenly he comes back and outboxes Aleida Alvarez over 12 rounds and, you know, takes his title back. So, yeah, I'm leaning towards Kovalev, to be honest with you.
That's fair enough. You can make case of all those four. And I'm thinking, you know, what an elite four they are, you know, or a star fighters, Gvozdik, Bivol, Kovalev, Beterbiev. You're urging towards Kovalev as the best, you know, and he rolled back the years against Alvarez, and you can't argue with that. You can't, you know, if Beterbiev goes and has two, three great wins this year, could you put him number one? And the great thing for Beterbiev, if he gets busy, is unifications. He's now with Top Rank after sorting out these promotional issues. Top Rank, co-promoters of your number one, Kovalev, and of course my number one, Gvozdik, is promoted by Top Rank. So there's every chance we could see, you know, maybe one unification this year. I think, you know, if we're going to see one unification this year, maybe Gvozdik against Beterbiev will be the likely one. Because, of course, Kovalev has got a mandatory against Anthony Yard coming up hopefully soon.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully we'll hear more about that very soon. So remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sonny Dev, at The Boxing Pod, and Box Nation this Saturday night is the place to be, live at 2:30 a.m. Artur Beterbiev, the beast from the east. He returns. Joe in Ancaeus defends his IBF World Super Flyweight title on that show as well. We're looking forward to it. Come along and follow us at The Boxing Pod. Steve, any closing comments?
Just looking forward to seeing Beterbiev this weekend. And can he become the number one light heavyweight in the world?
We shall find out. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll be back next week.